You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. I'm Steve Lippman. I'm with Dan Volpone and Emily Anderson. The Eagles lost. The Sixers are bad. Always, we're happy to talk to you again. We have a very special guest. Dan, you want to introduce everything?
Yeah, so we have Peter, Twitter's the Law Boy, on with us this week. And he's from the 5-4 pod, where they talk about the Supreme Court and how it sucks. And it's very entertaining. I'd recommend everyone listens. But Peter's also a big basketball fan, so we're going to talk some basketball and talk about some current events with politics and how everything is kind of tying in with racism in the league and how that ties in with the election, the Supreme Court vacancy, and all of that. So, Peter, first of all, you know, how are you? And also, you know, you said you're a Knicks fan, so how is that?
Yeah. I'm all right, you know. Things are fine. Being a Knicks fan, it's like, I don't know, it's so miserable that they're no longer like part of my basketball experience, if that makes sense. Like I watch a game now and then. I keep up with the roster to some degree, but like for the most part I just follow basketball generally, and like I have interest in certain players and certain teams, and I'll watch them. And the Knicks are just in the background going, you know, going 13-68 or 69. Just how it is.
So do you feel pretty divorced from the, like, anguish of the night-to-night Knicks fandom?
Yeah. I definitely don't. I don't really suffer anymore, because you're just, you know, you don't go into a season expecting them to even come close. So it's right. Just irrelevant. And they don't make good moves. They don't appear capable of making good moves. We've stumbled into one 50 win team in the, you know, it's just like whatever. They're just there losing. I'm not going to be like the, you know, like the Browns fans that showed up with the bags over their head. You know, I'm not paying $250 to go to MSG and watch them get stomped on by the Cavs or something.
That's smart.
They don't even seem to be selling you on hope either. They don't even care.
That's right. Yeah. I think it was Kevin Durant who said like last year that free agents now or players now are, you know, they can't remember when the Knicks were good. Right. So it's not cool to go to New York anymore. Right. They just don't associate the franchise. So I think that the hopes of us being this like free agent destination have sort of gone. And with that, I mean, I don't know what else we have, because we're not drafting well or anything.
It's been tough. And speaking of it's been tough, we're Sixers fans here. And it seems like you also follow the Sixers a bit.
I do.
The Sixers are like a social experiment. How do you feel watching the Sixers transform into sort of like a stepbrother of the Knicks and nearly the Knicks? Like, what is
That's a little
like
dramatic. You know, I know it feels like it, but That's you guys true. Have, you know, you've got two borderline elite players, right? Some decent young talent. Obviously, the front office is pretty bad, and that's probably going to cost you, you know, a real championship run. But at the same time, like, you can go to Sixers games, you know, and, like, root for your team and think that they might pull off a big win every now and then. It's different. Right. It's different.
It's definitely different. We've talked about, like, we were process people, so we got super into the team, especially during that, because we finally had a direction. But in the most recent years where they're, like, supposed to win all the time, it makes it such a worse viewing experience. Like
it does.
Like they win and you exhale, or they lose and you're like, fire everybody. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a Chiefs fan also. I have a weird mix of teams, but yeah, becoming like a juggernaut in the span of a year has been completely bizarre to me. And now it's, yeah, like we just lost 10 minutes ago and it's the first time we've lost in 11 months and people are just like furious, man. They're just like, they're like, this is embarrassing. We're losing to the Raiders. And it's like, no, dude, like you're going to take some losses every now and then. It's all right.
I know. It's easy to lose.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the current state of the Sixers from afar? They hired Doc Rivers. They are now starting to.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be Doc Rivers, man. That's a great move to, if you want to show the rest of the league that you're committed to being a second round out for the next for the next decade. I mean, look, there aren't that many great coaches, so it's fine, right? I think it's fine. I think the current front office botched it is pretty much spot on. The only thing I'll say in their defense is like, last year you've got this core of Embiid, Simmons, Butler, and I think you have like two realistic options. One is you keep them all and try to build around them. Obviously that's the best option. But the other, I think, is you look at Simmons and Butler and you're like, all right, they've got like overlapping skill sets to some degree. They don't space the floor enough. Get rid of one of them and bring in some good assets to replace them. Right. They did step one. It's like the concept was right. You know, it's just that, yeah, now you're sitting with Tobias Harris is the biggest contract on your team. It's just, I think like they were halfway there, man. They almost did it.
They really were so close.
Yeah.
So speaking of Jimmy Butler, we're now watching him and he's playing unreal in the NBA Finals. He has 2 triple doubles so far in this series. He had none the entire year on the Sixers last year. And he's just playing out of his mind. So I guess 2-part question for you here is, do you feel like Jimmy could have played like this in Philly, or is there that was never going to happen because of the fit you were just. So game 6 is tonight. Who you got? Well, we'll know the answer by the time the pod's out tomorrow, but who you got?
I mean, I don't know. I guess the Lakers are favorites. And I'll stick with that. I like LeBron. I want LeBron to get another ring just for like ammunition in my arguments about him being good, mostly. I hate the Lakers as a franchise. I hate the Heat as a franchise. It's just, they're miserable fucking teams, both of them.
Their fans are annoying too.
I think that's right. I mean, I actually like almost every player involved and the team fan bases are just the worst, man. Obviously it was a mistake to lose Butler, right? I certainly wasn't like convinced that the Sixers were getting rid of the best player on their team at the time. I don't think a lot of people were. I don't think you can put up a performance like this and say that it's like team specific. It's pretty obvious that he is just hitting his to some degree. He's not going to perform like this everywhere, but he's a top 10 dude. I think it's pretty clear right now. You have to be top 10 to put this sort of show on. I don't know whether it would have worked in Philly, but it's hard to believe that it wouldn't to some degree, right? I mean, it's a competent team. The Heat have spacing, right? That's the real big difference. They've got those shooters. I don't know enough about X's and O's to be like, all right, yeah, here's exactly why it's working on the Heat and why it wouldn't on the Sixers or whatever. My guess is that if you're a top 10 dude, which it seems like he is, you're going to make it work.
Yeah. I have to say, watching Jimmy in the finals, I'm getting closer and closer to dying on my hill that a more competent, authoritative coach could have made Ben and Jimmy get along, and this could have happened on the Sixers. I think this is my hill to die on, and I'm ready to die on it.
Right.
But so just to shift a little bit, a lot of times in the bubble, the play. Use their time in the bubble and the visibility for a while being the only sport going on and to shine light on the Black Lives Matter movement. So we just want to know your thoughts on the tactics of including, you know, the temporary strike and things like that to bring eyes to this movement and what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I think they've mostly done a good job. I mean, I think they've used their platforms as well as you could expect, right? They're all like, I mean, you enter the league and you're at the latest in your early 20s, probably, right? For most guys, they're not going to be able to engage in like full throated comprehensive social justice messaging or something, right? I think they've been good because they're speaking on Black Lives Matter, and that's something that they have natural experience with, right? It's a league that is like intertwined with Black people and Black culture to such a degree that they just know how to talk about this stuff. And you also see the limits of it when like they heard anti-Semitic shit earlier this year with some players. And I think what's missing is like an organizational framework like that is designed to help channel that's something the players union could help provide, organizations like that, where if they become a bit more invested in this, you could see them taking a role in like education and messaging and stuff like that, so that something that's, you know, a bunch of players firing in different directions suddenly starts to become like a little more targeted.
Mm-hmm. So to piggyback off of that, then the league as a whole also tried to like have a symbolic support of the message with the messaging on the court, but is that more just like performative, do you think? Do you think it's helpful? Do you think it's hollow? Obviously, I think we all probably would agree that a more targeted organizational structure would be more helpful, but what do you think about the actions that they're taking as of this past season?
It's definitely hollow to a degree, right? But I also don't know what, it's not like as hollow as what the NFL is doing, right? The thing the NBA has going for it is that its fans are younger, they're more diverse, so they can afford to do, right? The NFL is like taking, like going out of their way to come up with like stupid performative gestures that like don't alienate their angry fans. And the NBA doesn't have to worry about that. At the same time, I don't think, like, they're still just doing symbolic gestures for the most part. You know, I would have liked to see like Adam Silver come out and defend Masai Ujiri in the whole stadium cop incident, right, from the finals. Without stuff like that, it feels a little bit hollow. At the same time, NBA trying to do something, right? They're like, I don't know what they could do besides messaging and stuff. I think symbols have their place, and I don't know that I would expect them to do more. I would like to see real community investment from them, but considering that's just a pipe dream, I think like whatever. But yeah, put it on the court. Cool. Like, good with me.
Yeah.
So on the 5-4 pod, I can't remember the exact case because I'm not a lawyer or anything like that, but you talked a bit, and I know you said this was your particular specialty, about workers' rights and the advantage that the corporations hold over the workers, whereas, you know, the workers don't really have a choice to work, and there's not, you know, other jobs part. But I was wondering how you think that ties in with the NBA for a couple reasons, I guess, because one, most of the players are extremely wealthy and don't necessarily like have to work, but also there is not another basketball league that is going to pay anywhere near this to go to, so they still have to work within the league. So how do you think, you know, that structure, the very unique structure of the NBA, lets players use their platform? And do you feel like they're taking advantage of it in all, I know, not just in what they've done, but do you feel like there's other avenues that they can go to additionally take advantage of opportunities they have that regular people through their work don't?
Yeah. I mean, certainly they have a ton of leverage. I don't think they use it as much as they should. I think the players have more leverage than they realize. I think the fundamental issue with them is not money. I think it's that most of them just want to play basketball, right? And like the idea of really holding out for months on end from the one thing that most of them to this point have built their whole life. I thought like the Wildcat strike was great. It was a good sign. It was good that they got something out of it, but it certainly felt like, I mean, you know, the owners have billions on the line, right? So when there's that much money at stake and all you have to do is hold out for a couple weeks, that's a huge amount of leverage. I would like to see the players union really start to squeeze the NBA a little bit more, frankly. I mean, that's very general, but I think that it's right that they have a huge amount of leverage especially compared to your average worker. And I think that they don't really use it. We won't really see till the next big CBA negotiation, but that's how it feels.
Our listenership is, you know, basketball fans, and but they definitely stay plugged into politics and the world at large, especially now. And as somebody who knows a lot more about government and about politics, the Trump's nomination for the Supreme Court is Amy Coney Barrett, What can you tell us about her and about the likelihood of her confirmation? What do you have to say about her?
Yeah, well, I think if you understand like the Republican Party as like three groups of people, like you got the Donald Trumps who are just like pure like spite and grievance and whatever. And then you have the business people. And then you've got like the religious freaks, right? She's the religious type. Just like, not just religious, but like one of these people who like when they articulate their beliefs, you're like, oh shit, like this is like weird cult stuff, right? She's far right on every major issue. I think she would be the farthest right of the Trump appointments. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh have both been pretty much across the board right wing with the deviations. I think you wouldn't even see those deviations with her. That's all there is to it, really. I mean, frankly, she'd be just as bad as whoever's second in line. I try not to think too much about it, but she would be rough. In terms of the likelihood of confirmation, I would say it's pretty high. There aren't any real strategies that I've seen being bounced around that could actually stop it. There are some things that the Democrats are considering. I'm not like a Senate procedures expert or anything. Like if you guys hear about a Senate procedure in a Washington Post article, like that's the first time I'm reading about it too. You know, right. I think from what I can tell, she's going to get out of committee. Then you go to the full Senate and there's a vote. At that point, I don't really know how you stop it other than you prevent. There's either like cloture, which is like if there's not 50 senators on the floor, which so Democrats cannot show up. It's like incredibly hard to pull off at that scale. And then you need Republicans to not be dying of COVID. And that's like the other thing. It seems like they're mostly recovering. So my fingers were crossed, but.
A lot of people are saying as a counter to that, like should Biden win the election, one thing that they could do, one possible recourse is to pack the court. Could you explain a little bit like what they mean when they talk about that? Biden is hesitant to commit one way or the other on that publicly. What does that mean?
Yeah. So the number of Supreme Court justices is not set by pass a law saying now there's 11, now there's 13, right? And then whoever's the president just picks the next four or whatever it is. And bang, a 6-3 conservative majority, liberal majority. There is to it. The only reason it's been 9 for so long is just like momentum, norms, etc. I mean, it's a big discussion now. My instinct is that Biden not going one way or the other is a good sign. If he wasn't going to do it, he would just say he wasn't going to do it.
Right, right. Got it.
For that sets like a precedent then that if the party switches again, it's like, oh, well, I'll just take the court this way and I'll just take the court that way. And any like term limits or not term limits for the Supreme Court that are in to create that balance, then it just becomes like the president's court versus a court that had, backlogs.
I mean, I think a couple of things. One is like, what's the alternative, right? So if the alternative is 30 years of conservative domination of the court, then I'd say, who cares, right? Yeah. So yeah, they're going to stack it again. And then we restack it, right? And it just goes back and forth. So be it. That sounds it sounds crazy because the court's only going to get bigger and bigger. But at the same time, let's say someone builds in some term limits or whatever. And so you have like some stability in the numbers and then, you know, the parties just keep adding more and more. To me, that sounds better. That sounds fairer. I don't think it's worse. I think it's much better. I agree that it's going to create a situation where Republicans have to respond. I also think it's worth noting, though, that like the Supreme Court is keeping Republicans in presidential elections because of voting rights issues. Without the Supreme Court on their side on voting rights, the Republicans are probably getting annihilated in presidential elections. So like if the Democrats get the court once, I'm not sure that you're going to see a Republican president for 12 years, 16 years. Yeah.
So you also mentioned earlier cloture, where they need to have 50 senators present. And of course, not only does Donald Trump have COVID, but a few Republican senators have COVID and like a bunch of other people who were also at the, you know, the nomination, I guess, party, whatever it was. And so does that, could that mean that Republicans are like showing up to the Senate in like bubbles or like hazmat suits to try to get this through? Is that something they could do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sure. The way that like the committee is going to work is just going to be remote voting. The McConnell has said they won't do that for the Senate. Some procedural reason why he can't do that, or if he just doesn't want to. But yeah, nothing stops them from doing shit like that. And nothing stops them from showing up sick to the Senate floor, right? And which I think they would probably do if the alternative was not getting her through.
So to tie this into the conversation we were having previously about Black Lives Matter, do you see any role that the Supreme Court plays in that specific social movement, regardless of whether she's confirmed or not, just as it goes forward?
Honestly, not really. I mean, the court addresses like police abuses all the time. And that's the main role they have here, like Fourth Amendment stuff, search and seizure stuff, qualified immunity, which the court just declined to hear earlier this year, up to the court that are relevant to the issue of like police excesses. Nothing super specific, nothing like super tied into Black Lives Matter specifically. But it's always there when you're talking about police abuses, sure.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned how if Republicans didn't control the Supreme Court, they would have an extremely hard time winning elections. It's been talked about a lot. Republicans are, I think it's kind of just accepted at this point that they're going to try to steal the election through the court. Explain a little bit about what that would look like in terms of, you know, what ruling would go to the court they would try to use, or how that would work.
Yeah. So the way, what the Constitution says is that states can implement elections however they deem. There is also some language in the Constitution about equal protection under the law, a right to vote, et cetera. So you've got, like, on one side, states can do whatever they want, but they can't infringe on these rights. So the whole conversation is about what states can do that is still, and still, you know, doesn't violate equal protection. And the conservative position has always been that states can do a lot, right? That they can do, like, all sorts of, you know, gerrymandering, voter roll purges, all sorts of restrictions on who can vote, right? Felon registration laws, et cetera. So what's likely, I can't tell you exactly how it would play out, but what's likely to happen is that there's going to be ballots that are challenged under a state law. Some state says, you know, here's what you have to have for a ballot to be valid. That goes up and someone says, well, you know, these 10,000 are invalid. There's an argument over it. That ends up going up to the Supreme Court. And the question is, you know, are these invalid? Are they not? Is this rule unconstitutional because these people need to be able to vote, right? That's like what the boundaries of it will look like. It's hard to tell exactly what will happen. The way it worked in Bush v. Gore was, you know, there are a bunch of challenge ballots and the question was Florida law and Florida, like, state legislative procedures, bunch of like really, really convoluted shit that ended up playing out. And I expect the same, like, it's just going to be some swing states election laws that you've absolutely never heard of, and neither have I.
So in terms of that, what is the procedure that you know of, like, to fix those things? Because to me, and like, I'm not a lawyer, I know, I have no idea, but if they get brought up that they're unconstitutional, but they're in the laws, like, as much as we hate them, if the Supreme Court can't, like, over, like, in the terms of Florida, can't say, like, those votes count if it's in the law, right? So, like, how does that get fixed?
They can. So it depends on the law. But, like, there's nothing stopping the Supreme Court from saying felon disenfranchisement is unconstitutional.
Okay.
That's a denial of your equal protection of the law. The Supreme Court's prerogative is not to interpret state, but it can say this violates the Constitution. So that's what they can do. I mean, and there's tons of leeway for them to do it. They can say, you know, you can't kick people off voter rolls. You can't do whatever. I mean, like, many developed countries, most developed countries don't have voter registration, period. You just show up, right? I mean, there's a real argument that voter registration is like an infringement of your right to vote. The Supreme Court could just hold that and that would be it. I mean, so like what they can do is basically limitless, frankly.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know a ton about this, so these questions might seem like really stupid to you. Sorry.
No, they're good questions. They're good questions.
So to take it back to the NBA and voting and everything, the NBA and its players have generally made their messages about centered around like getting out to vote and registering to vote. And it's really important that everyone shows up to this election. So do you think that that's the best place to really focus their efforts to support Black Lives Matter and any other really social issues that they're passionate about?
I would like to see more focus on community organizing, but it's an easy... wrong and like it's an easy message, right? To say the wrong thing at a rally, you just like you just put vote on your shirt and you move forward. That's it. So yeah, I mean, is it sufficient? No, but like it's a step. It's a good step, I think. And again, like it's the kind of thing that could be addressed by having like a players union that is a little more adept, a little more tied into social economic issues and could like actually push them in a direction where they're on the ground a little bit more in their communities.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So John Gonzalez of The Ringer put together a piece on campaign donation data from NBA owners, which includes friend of the podcast, Joshua Harris. They donate to Republicans who are against Black Lives Matter and perpetrators of voter suppression, despite the league's public messaging that, look, Black Lives Matter is on the court.
Yeah.
How do NBA owners and other corporations and leaders of these corporations get away with this level of hypocrisy?
Super anti-Black Lives Matter, at least most of them. They're just like ultra rich. They're insulated from all this stuff. It doesn't bother them in any real way. And they vote Republican because Republicans aid the interests of extremely rich people, right? And seeing as you're like, you're not going to find like 30 woke billionaires anytime soon, right? So I honestly don't know how to fix this other than like the Green Bay Packers model, right? They're just the community owned team.
Right.
It seems like the only way because otherwise, I mean, how do you stop billionaires from supporting their own interests and perpetuating their wealth? The only way would be if you manage to sort of divorce the Republican, like the Republican conservative fiscal, social conservatism of the party. I don't see that happening anytime soon. So they're going to keep voting Republican because they don't give a shit about this stuff. Their lives are frilly and completely, completely insulated from any shit on the ground. They have no idea what players are talking about when they're talking about Black Lives Matter, right?
Right.
Telling police what to fucking do. It's.
Yeah. Did you guys see the, Tillman Fertitta thing that came out this morning? So Tillman Fertitta is the Rockets owner and notoriously like cheap ass.
Right.
And so he, I guess, had taken a lot of flack because of the, I think it was the, like the PPP money that's supposed to go to small businesses. He took some of that. Then he set up a meeting with the funds that were supposed to go to bigger businesses. And Trump like called in like Steve Mnuchin and was like, hey, see what you can do for like this guy. He was a tenant in one of my buildings. He's, or he, he had like, he was selling something there. And he's like, he's never made a late payment. Like, good friend of mine, see what you can do. It's like, they're all tied in with this shit.
That's great. Did they pay for Westbrook with that PPP money? Is that how it happened?
They're not even going to pay for Westbrook. He's going to trade whatever it takes to get off of that.
I hope so, man. I was a big fan of Morey back in the days when no one thought analytics in basketball was going to work. I was like,
he's such a trailblazer. Yeah,
he was. That's how you guys got to where you are. you can blame Daryl Morey.
That's right.
He's responsible for the good players on the team, and then we blame everyone else for the bad players on the team.
I mean, that's pretty fair. That's pretty
clean
fair.
Line. So I wanted to ask you about yourself a little bit, and just, you know, obviously you're a lawyer, and also you talk about politics a lot. You have a pod where you talk about politics, and a very popular Twitter account where you talk about politics. So does this focus on like these kinds of issues that we've been talking about that are tied into the league, and not just now, not just when players are talking about them, but especially like the campaign donations and things like that, that's always there. Do you feel like that's more, you know, in your awareness while you're watching the league as someone who is talking about these issues a lot, or is it not very difficult for you to kind of put those things aside and just be a normal fan, just watch a game?
Yeah. I can't separate them entirely. I'm definitely like a basketball fan first. Like, you know, I'm a basketball fan because in the 90s I was watching the Knicks when they were good. And every other night I was sitting in front of the television. I think it makes me like considerably more aware of like players' rights issues, of what the league is doing right and wrong on these social justice issues, stuff like that. And like contrasting with the NFL. I mean, a better model is like, a better sort of predictor for who like gets fed up with this shit and who doesn't is what you think of the NFL, because they handle everything so fucking terribly, because they're just churning out money. Right.
Right.
And so they don't care. They've got like Mahomes almost got COVID last week because they just like, don't like, they're like basically the face of their league right now. They put at risk of getting COVID because they just don't give a shit about anything because they are printing money. I'm glad that my favorite league is not the one doing that. But at the same time, I still watch the NFL. You know, the product is good. It's something that I was raised with. I'm not going to pretend that I could like just be like, no more football for me. Like, short of them doing something like really truly egregious.
Yeah, I've never, I guess, even thought about like being able to put aside sports, because I'm just like, I've always grown up watching sports, and it's like, especially the NFL. You could argue that also the cover up of the CTE stuff didn't even get them as much like flack as it should have, because of, you know, they were literally killing players. But it's really fun to watch. not players getting hurt is the game. I'm a big Eagles fan.
No, it's right. Anyway. It's true. That's the one thing. When I said they didn't do it, as long as they didn't do anything egregious, I was like, actually, maybe the CTE stuff is fucking egregious.
Right.
Now that I think about it, I don't want to put that out in the world like I'm like I'm on the NFL's team here.
Yeah. So, on 5-4, this is a non-law take of yours that baseball is not a real sport.
That's
so
correct.
I grew up going to a lot of baseball games. I can't really watch it anymore, partly because the Phillies suck, but also it's just so boring. I don't even watch the playoffs. Could you explain why basketball is so much cooler? Why it's
absolutely
more of a sport?
So first, we can start with what's awful about baseball, because that's easy. They're out there in fucking jumpsuits, like same outfits as they wore in like the 1880s, and they've got leather belts on. That's just not real sporting attire. They are like chewing gum while they're playing. What kind of sport can you, it blows my mind. They've got athletes that are just like big dudes, and that's all they are, right? That you just stick them at first base and it's like, there you go, buddy. Just get up there and swing away. That's not an athlete. It's just like a strong dude, and they just put him up there and that's that. The sport, it's too arbitrary. You have to compare it to the purity of basketball, right? Basketball, you can explain to anyone in any country immediately, like, put the ball in the basket and the other guy stops him. Same with like soccer, right? This is why soccer is like the popular sport in the world, because it's so simple and you immediately get it. Baseball, on the other hand, it's clearly based around the idea that people were like, well, there should be a sport where like you throw something and then someone hits it with a stick, right? That makes sense. Everything after that is just nonsense. Like, they're just like, and then I guess we'll put bases out there. And if you're on one, you're in. If you're not, and someone hits you, tags you the ball, you're out. It's just, it's too arbitrary. You're deviating from the formula far too much. If baseball was just pitching and hitting and that was it, and it was like, how far do you hit it? I would respect that a lot more. That makes a lot more sense as a sport to me. Basketball, they're barely wearing clothes, right? It's almost like Greco-Roman in that sense. They're just, you're in thin mesh to maximize your mobility. That's how you know that a sport requires real athleticism. It's so much purer. Is there any question that like LeBron James would be incredibly good at almost every single professional sport? Of course.
Oh, no doubt.
It's the best athletes in the world in the NBA. I feel like that's just unquestionable.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering, Emily, do you have a counter argument to this? I know you're a baseball fan.
I don't have a counter argument to your points. I just don't think that your points are what makes a sport, but I don't have a counter argument to like all of your points.
Well, there's no clear definition of sport. That's why this discussion is so fun. But obviously, like, you get to a point where it's like people would say like poker is a sport, and everyone is like, I don't know, like, relax, like there's no
e-gaming,
like, right. So there's some difference between athletic ability and a sport. Saying it's not a sport, probably a little strong. It's a boring ass sport in my
opinion. You ever a baseball fan, and there was like one year where you were like, nope, it's not even a sport?
I wouldn't say there was one year. One reason I'm not into baseball is because, so I've got some weird teams, but they mostly revolve around New York. My dad was an immigrant that came to New York. So he was like not very into American sports because he's an immigrant. But at the same time, like the New York teams that were good when I was like eight, right? You're like an 8-year-old kid and the team's kicking ass. You're into it.
Right.
So to some degree I was a Yankees fan, and honestly, it just got boring. Like when I basically first got into sports, and then they just rattled off like four titles in a row, skipped a year. And I was like, well, that was pretty boring. Right. I mean, after that, then we won in 2009. And even though it had been like 9 years, I still felt like we had just won the title. And it's just like, too much success. You have to suffer first to really be a fan. I'm very convinced of that. And every like kid who's a Warriors fan and is like 7 years old, mm-hmm. I promise you, they're not going to be hugely into basketball in 20 years. They just can't. You can't be. You have to suffer.
Yeah. You know, I would
love to be bored like that. Just like title after title. I'd love that.
Well, I was.
Look, yeah, I agree. And like, look, the Chiefs are good now. I'm a Chiefs fan. We just did 25 years with no playoff wins. Like, yeah. And then all of a sudden we're a juggernaut. Like, yeah, I feel you. I'm ready to go. But I also feel like it is going to ruin the next 30 years of my Chiefs fandom to some degree.
I was thinking about, like, I don't even know if this is currently accurate. I'm not a big college football guy, but if you're a fan of Alabama and they either win or lose in the title game every year, like, are you interested in the season at all? Like, is there anything compelling about, like, I hate the Sixers, but I love them and I want them to do well, and they do well so rarely that when they finally do well, it will be euphoric. So like my high will be so much higher than those people's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has to be true, right? If the Chiefs two-peat, right? Repeat, it's not two-peat.
Right.
If they repeat this year, I think that I will just become one of these people where it's like, I was talking to a Patriots fan about this because I was like, what's it like? And like, they're like, well, your standards just go up. Like every small failure becomes this like huge thing that you become really upset about. And at the same time, I was like, but then like you lose all the little things that make being a sports fan great, right? Like every little like divisional upset or whatever all of a sudden means nothing, right?
Right.
Expected. And all you're really doing is fending off haters, because you've got people, everyone's gunning for you, and everyone thinks you're going to win. So if you lose, they shit on you. All you're doing is just avoiding that situation, right? Where your team gets shit on for blowing it. Like now when Mahomes has like a mediocre game, he's like trending on Twitter. It's like, what the fuck, dude? Like let the dude live.
Right.
Like, he's 24. Relax.
Right.
I feel that with the Eagles. Like when they won the Super Bowl in 2018, and obviously they'd never won one, and it was a huge deal. But I used to be so pissed. Like even that year, like they lost two real games and then one game where they won in week seven. And like, I remember when they lost to the Seahawks earlier that year, I was pissed. Like, I threw my phone. I was mad. They lose now. And I'm like, at least they won. It's fine.
Right, right.
I remember that year they were probably like 10-1 at that point when they were playing the Seahawks and they lost to the Seahawks and people were freaking out. And I remember thinking, like, guys, we usually do this all the time. We just did it once. It's fine. Like, things are still good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it goes. So
are you guys depressed? It's a mini version of Butler on the Heat, watching Foles crush it out there.
I'm just happy it happened. Like, I feel like looking back on it, it feels like such a fluke now that we've kind of like, these guys aren't what they were. Like,
right. Yeah.
Even Aguilar was having a great season and he's horrible. Right. So like, My roommate is from Chicago, so like, I still watch the Bears play. So it's so nice to not have to watch Mitch throw ducks. I love seeing Foles throw deep. I love him.
Yeah, love Foles.
So
that was a great run, man. That was like the best. That was like the best possible situation. Like, you're upsetting the Patriots. This like total slug out game. Like, it was fucking great, man.
They had that total underdog thing where like, they're not supposed to be there. This guy who was like not in the
backup
league.
Backup quarterback.
Exactly. So it's like, it was like perfect. And it, you know, we're very
real
lucky to have
real
that.
Real Disney movie shit.
Right.
Except that everyone called him Big Dick Nick and
simple rewrite.
Real, yeah. Little Philly version of a Disney movie.
Yeah. Still one of the great nicknames, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you a bit about 5-4. I was just telling Steve before we started recording, but I started listening to the pod because I was on a long bus ride and I saw you tweeted it out and I was like, hey, I could do something to listen to. And I ended up really liking it. So I always listen to you guys. And I was wondering, do you have, you know, a particular moment or episode that you feel like stands out, or even if you wanted to recommend one for our listeners to check you out, what was your favorite?
I mean, the recommended starting place is always the first episode, which is Bush v. Gore. I don't think it's our best episode, but it's good. And it shows you what we're about. Our actual best episodes, I think, are our cop episodes. We've got Castle Rock v. Gonzalez is one of them. We did a whole episode on qualified immunity. That was pretty good. And then some of our most recent episodes have been good. When RBG died, we did a good one. And we just did one on Amy Coney Barrett. It was also very satisfying. We absolutely didn't need to do that one, but I just wanted to vent about that bitch for a little bit.
From a general sense, in terms of the government and the election and the whatever else, you can loop the Sixers in, it's sort of all the same thing. Is there any way that we're not fucked? And are there any people currently in power as politicians that restore some faith in you that give you hope?
Not big on many politicians these days. I mean, I was a Bernie guy. He's still fine. There are some, you know, I like AOC. I like Ro Khanna out in California. We're having him on the podcast this week, so I gotta be nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool.
Yeah, we're scoring the big dogs. I don't think he knows what we're about yet. His conference is about to get in deep in some shit. Yeah. I don't know that there's any politicians that I'm super high on. I do think that, like, if you're being optimistic, if Biden won and packed the court and then real dynamic and powerful like left bloc, like the AOC Bernie Sanders wing of the party, if they actually were able to flex some muscle, I think you could see the next 4 years being pretty solid. I don't know what the fuck they do when Biden's 83 or whatever. just absolutely bleeding out of his ears when they're running some like, you know, 29-year-old fascist against him or whatever. But I mean, look, I always say, like, look, climate change aside, because I'm super pessimistic on climate change. Never, I'm just like, I like don't think people should have kids anymore. It's just game over. Let's just like let the planet die and be done with it. But aside from the fact that the planet is just roasting, I think that a Biden win would be a pretty big tide turner here. I don't like Joe Biden, but I think that his the potential for just wresting power away from Republicans and what could be done there is pretty high.
Is there anything else that you'd like to promote or let our listeners know? I mean, it's the 5-4 podcast, and I imagine they can find that wherever they get podcasts. Anything else?
Yeah, we're all over the place. No, no. I do want to say, I didn't think Jimmy Butler was that good. I just wanted to confess it in a public forum. I really didn't think so last year, and I've been very much humbled. I was definitely a Lakers in five guy, like this is right. Over. And they had that game three and I was like, maybe not. Maybe this is Heat in seven. I don't know. I still don't know.
I mean, game five, he's going shot for shot with LeBron, and every single shot is a referendum on the Sixers, and I hate it.
That's what it felt like. Oh yeah, that's the thing about the front office decision. Like I was always and to some degree still am a Trade Simmons guy. I mean I like him. I think he's got a great game. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they should do it right now, to be clear. When they had Butler, I thought that if you want to move one, you move Simmons, because I shouldn't say can't shoot, doesn't shoot is a better descriptor for, which is very
probably
unusual.
Can also.
I think that's safe, but isn't he 100% and it's 2 attempts or whatever?
The ones we get to see, yeah.
Really yeah. I think that it was a very reasonable thing to think dish Butler, get assets, and that it would almost be it would be weird right now if they had pulled in good assets and you see Butler crushing it, and then you'd have to go up against him in the ECF, and you know that he would take that shit personally and just eat the Sixers alive. Luckily you guys don't have to worry about the Eastern Conference Finals for a bit.
I also did not. I mean, I don't think Jimmy has ever been this good, to be fair. So,
right.
But I didn't. I shocked you. I didn't think he had it in him. I mean, he's obviously a very, very good player, but I didn't think he could get to this level. And he was. I mean, the jokes on the way out were so easy because he's the guy who wants to tell you how hard he's working, and you know, he just won't shut up about how he's dribbling in his room at 3 a.m. waking everyone up in the bubble. And now we just look like morons.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's weird because I think initially the reports that he wasn't getting along with Brett Brown, and it was it puts ownership at a crossroads, right? Do Butler or the coach? And now you're looking at it, you're like, oh, Butler. Yeah, that's an easy decision. At the time, I don't think you can ever. I don't think you can say that. I think it looked like Brett Brown, you know, doing what he could and whatever. And there aren't that many good coaches in the NBA. So lose Butler if you have to lose one of them. But in retrospect, it's like, no, look, you'll find a coach later. There's only one Jimmy Butler.
It seems like all the smoke is that it really was a Bannon-Butler thing, because there's so much reporting about how the owners wanted to fire Brett for years. And they lost in seven to Toronto. So they were like, by this point, all the candidates we wanted are gone. You know, who cares? Mm-hmm. Keep them, you know, they wanted Jay Wright for fucking forever. So, were you, as a Knicks fan, the Zion lottery? Were you? Did you have any hope, or you were like,
I don't want to do that to players like Zion. Honestly, I was a little relieved when we even this year we got the eighth pick, which is fucking hilarious. Nothing goes right. But with Zion, I was it would be really sad, honestly. Porzingis was here, and he brought us, I don't even remember how many wins we got. A good player brings us to the 30s for wins on the year. It's just sad. Get him out of here, man. I feel bad. I also, my real hot take, now that I'm on a basketball podcast and probably never will be again, I should say, my real hot take is Zion's going to be a bust because of injuries.
Injuries.
I think if you watch his film at Duke, that dude was flying. He just bounced around in unnatural ways. And now he looks a very athletic dude, but he's fallen off in my view. And I don't know if that's specifically because of the injuries or he's just put on a little too much weight, but I don't think someone who's walking around at 280 can sustain an NBA career for long. And when he's already got injuries, I think it's going to go down in history as a bust. That's my take. I could also easily just be the next LeBron. But I just want to get on the record as going hard, really hard in one direction.
Wow.
Steve, it's funny you brought that up because I feel like at the time, everyone was telling Knicks fans, you know, oh, KD and Kyrie are going to sign there. The NBA is going to fix the lottery, send you Zion. And the Knicks fans knew. They were like, nothing good's going
to
happen.
The idea that the NBA wants us to be good is just so ridiculous. Like, I guess they've just been doing a really terrible job at it for 20 years. Like, I'm pretty sure if it was going to get fixed in the Knicks' favor, that something good might have happened to us in the past 20 years.
But yeah, no. I think there's enough evidence now that the NBA isn't exactly colluding to keep the Knicks in it, you know?
If I know you guys have an owner that is donating to Republicans, but Dolan is actually funding. There was like some, I think it was like a state rep or whatever out in Staten Island who said that Dolan should sell the team. Dolan is now funding his opponent, like openly and on purpose, like because he said that. Like, it's just, she's like a stranglehold on New York politics just because the Knicks suck. It's just awful, dude.
Well, I mean, the ego, it's really wild.
It is crazy that he thinks I don't know what he thinks of himself, but obviously he's sensitive, is like responds to criticism very aggressively, which is bizarre because I don't know how he couldn't accept it. Like, he's had this awful team that's right. Just turned this landmark franchise into absolutely nothing. But I believe that he thinks that he's a good owner. I believe it with all my heart. He definitely thinks that he's like talented or something. It's very weird. It's very weird.
If you could play the kazoo like him, you'd have a big ego too. So,
dude, I mean, he plays at MSG, so he must be good, right?
Yeah, he's a headline star. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this. It was so great to have you.
It was fun. Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
Thank you so
much, Peter.
See you guys. Thanks.
See ya.
Oh yeah, baby, I love you.